Purgatorio, nove sesso similare a passato. Hare Krishna. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 1, text number 5. If we're going to make it through the 11th canto, we're going to probably need another Bhagavatam. The back's torn off of this one already. You're only 5 verses in. Yeah, well, something. The binding's going to come apart here. If the temple needs a new set of Bhagavatams, I can donate it so I can get my 50 books. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 1, the curse upon the Yadu dynasty, text number 5. Word meanings, Avam, in this way, Virasita, deciding for certain, Rajan, O king, Satya Sankalpa, whose desire always proves true, Ishvaraha, the Supreme Lord, Sapa Vyajena, by the pretext of a curse, Vipranam, of Brahmins, Sanjare, withdrew Swakulam, his own family, Vibhu, the Almighty. Evam vivasito rajan, satya santalpa ishvara, apavrajena vipranam, sanjare svakulam vibhu, evam vivasito rajan, satya santalpa ishvaraha, papa vyajena vipranam, sanjare svakulam vibhu, evam vidasito rajan, satya santalpa ishvaraha, Sapa Vyajena Vipranam, Sanjare Svakulam Vibhu.
Sanjare Svakulam Vibhu.
Anyone else? Okay, now, there's a very long purport to this verse, so I'd like to do something that we do in Gainesville, when there's a long purport, and that is have others read different paragraphs of the purport. There's about 3 pages here. So I'll read the first paragraph, and if you have the microphone, you can pass it, and others can read a paragraph at a time. So that everyone doesn't have to listen to my voice the whole time. By the time we get through 3 pages of purport, we'll be ready to go. So this way we can keep the interest, mainly keep the focus. It's long. But very interesting, long but very, very interesting purport, I must say. Very interesting verse in purport. Translation, my dear King Parikshit, when the Supreme Almighty Lord, whose desire always comes to pass, had thus made up his mind, he withdrew his own family on the pretext of a curse spoken by an assembly of Brahmanas. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made a very important comment on this verse. He states that since the intentions of the Supreme Lord, Krishna Chandra, are always perfect, it was certainly in consideration of the greatest benefit for the entire world that he destroyed his own family on the pretext of a curse by Brahmanas. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has shown a parallel in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, appearing as his own devotee.
Lord Chaitanya appeared along with his first plenary expansion, known as Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and with Lord Advaita Prabhu. All 3 personalities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu, are accepted by Vaishnava Acharyas to be in the category of Vishnu Tattva, the full status of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These 3 personalities of Godhead perceive that in the future, their so-called seminal descendants would get undue recognition and thus, being puffed up, would commit grave offenses against those who were actually Vaishnava gurus or representatives of the Lord.
Every living being is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vangsha. Every living entity is originally a son of God, yet to execute his pastimes, the Lord selects certainly highly qualified living entities whom he allows to take birth as his personal relatives. But those living entities who appear as descendants of the Lord's personal family may undoubtedly become proud of such a position and thus abuse the great adulation they receive from ordinary people. In this way, such persons may artificially get undue attention and divert people from the actual principle of spiritual advancement, which is to surrender to the pure devotee who represents the Lord. The last 8 verses of the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita give a description of the pure devotees of the Lord, permits to act as acharyas or spiritual leaders of mankind. In other words, simply to take birth in the personal family of Krishna is not the qualification of being a spiritual master, since according to Bhagavad Gita, Pitaham Asya Jagata, every living entity is eternally a member of the Lord's family. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Namedheshu Stanapriya, I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy, and no one is my special friend. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears to have a special family, such as the Yadu dynasty, such a so-called family is a special arrangement of the Lord's pastimes. in order to attract the conditioned souls. When Krishna descends, he acts as if he were an ordinary person in order to attract the living entities to his pastimes. Therefore, Krishna acted as though the Yadu dynasty was his personal family, although in fact every living entity is a member of his family.
Ordinary people, however, not understanding the higher principles of spiritual knowledge, easily forget the actual qualifications of a... Forget the actual qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master, and instead give undue importance to people born in the Lord's so-called family. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, avoided the impediment on the path of spiritual enlightenment by leaving behind no children. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu married twice, he was childless. Nityananda Prabhu, who was also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not accept any of the natural sons born of son, Virabhadra. Similarly, Lord Advaita Acharya divested of his association all of his sons except Achyutananda and two others. Achyutananda, the chief faithful son of Advaita Acharya, had no seminal progeny. I got lost. Where am I?
And the
remaining three of the six sons of Lord Advaita fell from the path of devotion to the Lord and are known as rejected sons. In other words, the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allowed little facility for continuing a so-called seminal family to create confusion. The respect shown to the conception of seminal lineage in deference to the ideas of the smartas is unfit to be accepted by one who actually understands the supreme truth of Vedic authority.
Other acharyas, or spiritual masters, have also demonstrated this point in their own families. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our own beloved spiritual master, who is the mighty author of this Srimad Bhagavatam series, was born in a family of pure devotees. And he himself exhibited all the symptoms of pure devotional service from his very childhood. Srila Prabhupada eventually came to the Western countries and exhibited unprecedented spiritual potency in establishing the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. In a few short years, he translated more than 50 large volumes of Vedic philosophy. By his practical activities, he is certainly understood to be the most empowered representative of the Lord. Nonetheless, his own family members, although devotees of Krishna, did not at all come up to the proper standard of devotional service and are therefore not given attention by the members of ISKCON. The natural tendency for the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would be to offer all reverence and worship to the members of Srila Prabhupada's immediate family. But since, by Krishna's arrangement, these family members are not at all on the platform of pure devotional service, the members of ISKCON give them hardly any attention, but instead worship those who actually exhibit the qualities of highly advanced Vaishnavas, regardless of their so-called birth. In other words, birth cannot constitute the qualification for a respectable person. Even when one is born in the Lord's own family or in the Acharya's family, what to speak of an ordinary, wealthy or learned family?
In India, there is a class of men known as Nityananda Vamsha.
who claim to be direct descendants of Lord Nityananda, and therefore worthy of the highest respect for their position in devotional service. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada has written the Nectar of Devotion. In the Middle Ages, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya's great associate, Lord Nityananda, a class of priestly persons claimed to be the descendants of Nityananda, calling themselves the Goswami caste. They further claim that the practice and spreading of devotional service belong only to their particular class, which was known as Nityananda Vamsha. In this way, they exercised their artificial power for some time, until Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the powerful acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, completely smashed their idea. There was a great hard struggle for some time, but it has turned out successful, and it is now correctly and practically established that devotional service is not restricted to a particular class of men. Besides that, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is already a high-class brahmana. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's struggle for this movement has come out successful. It is on the basis of his position that anyone from any part of the universe can become a Gaudiya Vaishnava.
In other words, the essence of spiritual knowledge is that every living being, regardless of his present status in life, is originally a servant of the Supreme Lord. And it is the mission of the Lord to reclaim all of these fallen living entities. Despite his past situation, any living being who is willing to surrender again at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord or his bona fide representative can purify himself by strictly adhering to the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga, and thus act as a high-class Brahmana. Nonetheless, the seminal descendants of the Lord think themselves to have acquired their ancestors' character and position. Thus the Supreme Lord, who is the well-wisher of the entire universe and especially of his devotees, bewilders the discriminatory power of his own descendants in such a contradictory way that these seminal descendants become recognized as deviant, and the actual qualification to be a representative of the Lord, namely unalloyed surrender to the will of Krishna, remains prominent. End of quote.
Thank you very much. Onu gyanata mirandasya dhananjana shulakaya chakshana nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. As I said, very interesting purport, talking about connecting actually the high philosophy of Krishna's thoughts and desires with what we see manifest in the last century or so in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Yesterday, Madan Mohan Prabhu began his class by pointing out that it was interesting that the verse was talking about the thoughts of God. It's sort of a novel concept to think that God has thoughts, but that may reflect more of our impersonalism than reality. Not only were the thoughts of the Supreme Lord discussed in previous verses, but in today's verse we have the satya-sankalpa, the desire. Satya-sankalpa means whose desire always proves true. So we have the desire of the Supreme Lord. These are personal characteristics, the thought or the desire, the determination. These are all things we associate with a person. And so we can understand that the Supreme Lord is a person, and the way things happen in this world are based on his desires, just like our own experience. Of course, we're conditioned souls, and so therefore we're covered by ignorance. And we start from that platform. But to accomplish anything or to lead our lives anything, we have a cycle or chain of events that's described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We have desire, and that desire motivates us to engage in fruitive activities, and then we get the reactions to those fruitive activities, and then we have more desires, more actions, more reactions, and this cycle, or this chain of fruitive work, as is described in the first canto, keeps us bound in this material world forever. So it's based on desire. Our own experiences, we're people, we have desires, we act, and we're bound. We act like that because we are part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna also has thoughts, desires, and acts. And this is described in the Svetasvara Upanishad. Parastha Shakti Vividayu Svite Svabhavaki Gyanam Balakriya Cha. That the Supreme Lord, his characteristic is he has unlimited potencies. And those potencies, in the translation says, they're acting as if in natural sequence or in natural order or something like that. His potencies act so perfectly that we think that things happen automatically. But it's not. Things don't happen in our life automatically. There's desire, there's action, and then there's the result. Things that are involved in Krishna's material and spiritual worlds are based on his desire. He desires, and then he acts. Of course, it's not like anything's predestined for him. No, it's not predestined. It's based on his desire. Ichi Shakti is his how are we going to term that? His potency. His desire potency. Swa-icha, swecha, his own desire. Okay, his own desire. He has that potency, and so you would think God wouldn't have to desire anything. That's what the point I'm trying to make is. It seems a little contradictory that God would have to desire something. He already has it. He has everything. It's already existing with him. It's eternal. But still, he's a person, and so therefore, he desires swa-icha shakti, and by his kriya shakti potency, whatever he desires automatically is there. And so, when we see the Lord here thinking and then desiring, everything that flows from that, the whole history of how the Yadu dynasty tried to fool the sages, play a joke on them, how they were cursed, how Ugrasena ordered the lump of iron to be ground, how that lump of iron was thrown into the sea, grew into the reeds, how they got intoxicated, how they fought and killed each other. All of that flows from Krishna's desire. All of that flows from Krishna's desire. We're all sub-actors to Krishna's desire. He desired in a certain way that his family should not be a burden. And we'll talk a little bit about that. He desired in that way. And so much flowed from that. So much activity flowed from that by sub-actors to the will of the Lord. And that includes us. So, this is how Krishna is a person. Everything comes from his personal desire. And what comes from his desire is not ordinary. It's also spiritual. It's also spiritual. Now, this is important to understand that it's all spiritual because as we have here in the purport today, we have a description of how similar desires of the Lord in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes resulted in certain things that have always been a little bit bewildering to me, maybe to you also, particularly how Advaitacharya's sons, even as it's said in the purport here, Prabhupada's family, how they're all basically non-devotees. Do you know the history that Prabhupada's eldest son, Madan, was known as Mohan? Man Mohan Day, that he sued in court in India, he sued ISKCON because he said that particularly he was going after the books. He wanted the books to be his property, and his argument was that I'm the primogenitor, I'm the first son, and therefore I naturally inherit all the wealth of my father. And so he knew the value of the books, so he wanted the books. He wanted ISKCON. He wanted to be the family's personal property. So when we see that by the Supreme Lord's desire, they weren't devotees, there's some good purpose there, just as there's a good purpose that Advaitacharya's sons, three of them at least, fell away from the path of devotional service. Even that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no issue, although he married twice. That also has a spiritual purport to it. All these things are very special activities. And we shouldn't take them as ordinary happenings. They're derived from the will, the Ichha Shakti of the Supreme Lord. Now there are some, this way of thinking or understanding, particularly as the purport relates it to Srila Prabhupada, can also help us get some transcendental perspective on things that are very much part of our lives. For instance, this year is the 50th anniversary of ISKCON. Now, the 50th anniversary of ISKCON can be taken as a mundane thing, just counting up the years and considering the organization ISKCON to be material, or to not be significant, or just we're placing significance on them. But actually, if we apply the logic that we read in this purport, in this verse about the Lord's desire and how things flow from the Lord's desire, we can understand that ISKCON is flowing from the Lord's desire. It's not just a mundane organization. It's not. It's the desire, the persistent desire of the previous acharyas as well as Srila Prabhupada. This idea of organizing the Vaishnavas into an association was initiated by Jiva Goswami. I didn't have time to look up the history that I know is there, but it's something Raja Sabha, something Vishva, what is it? Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, an assembly of Vaishnavas. He started this idea that there should be a collective efforts, collective group of Vaishnavas. On the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he started, he had this idea. And so the idea of organizing Vaishnavas, particularly all over the world, is the Lord's desire. It's not an individual's desire. Even if it is an individual's desire, when we think about Srila Prabhupada, It's not an ordinary thing. The verse told how much of an empowered acharya he is. And so his desire for an organization working conjointly to spread Krishna consciousness was very persistent. If we look at his life, it's a very big part of his life, and it's a persistent theme. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used this example of Krishna's desire to rid the world of the burden of the other dynasty. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used the same kind of logic and consistency of argument to argue that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, we can see the same thing. There was a concern for the future, and therefore descendants were got rid of one way or another. And so this idea of concern for the future and descendants, we also find in Prabhupada's Leela. So we can also say that there's some connectivity here. There's a flow of similarity in the actions. So if we examine Srila Prabhupada's life and his desire for an organization, we can go back to the time when he left his family. From the time he left his family, he was concerned about this. He wrote in his Bhakti Godhead magazine about the conception of Gita Nagari. And then he wrote something in 1948. He wrote an essay called The Gita Nagari Prophecy. And if you're familiar with that, you know that basically he was talking about a place not unlike Ramanreti. New Ramanreti here where we're sitting today, not unlike this place, where people could come and serve Krishna and discuss about Krishna. This was what he wanted. It says here that the Gita Nagari prophecy ran more than 35 pages, being a comprehensive explanation of how the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita can be realized and practiced in Gita Nagari, the place where the Bhagavad Gita is sung. The prophecy described principles of training, leadership, cultural center, facility for residents and guests, and what needed to be organized and what was needed to organize the efforts to help the mission of Gita Nagari permanently. Does that sound a little bit like what we're trying to do here? I mean, the board members can say, but I think that there's some consistency between what Prabhupada is talking here, the Gita Nagari prophecy, and what we see manifesting here today. So whose desire is that we see manifest? It's Prabhupada's desire that we were seeing it manifest. Just like it was Krishna's desire that manifest in ridding his family members from being a burden. Prabhupada had a desire in this way. And as I say, he was persistent. That was 1948. 1952, Prabhupada launched the League of Devotees in Jhansi, India. Now, if you're familiar with the documentation of this, and you're familiar with the articles of incorporation of ISKCON, then you'll see some parallels in what I'm reading. I'm going to read to you some of the purposes of the League of Devotees. Purposes: to propagate spiritual knowledge systematically for checking the imbalance of life. It's the same thing you find in the Prabhupada wrote in the original articles in 1966. To build up a structure, a social structure, on the foundation of the spiritual progress and establishment of a peace and enmity between man and man throughout the whole world. Prabhupada didn't think small. To propagate the sense of Godhead, who is one and the absolute. To bring members together individually to one another and nearer to Godhead, who is the prime entity. These are practically the same words you find in the incorporation papers in 1966. But this is 1952 when Prabhupada is launching the League of Devotees in Jhansi. He had this idea, he had this desire, and it bore fruit in 1966 when he was in New York and he established ISKCON. So ISKCON is the result of a strong desire by Srila Prabhupada. And when the devotee of the Lord, or Lord himself, desires, what is manifest is not ordinary. It's not ordinary in any way. Now, it's the spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. And we can think as much as we want about how ISKCON is a mundane organization, or how ISKCON acts in mundane ways. But that's not the reality if we understand the way the Supreme Lord acts and the way his empowered acharyas act on his behalf. What they desire is for the benefit of all beings, and is a spiritually charged entity. Now, of course, we can act materially and we make mistakes and we do so many things. We can mess it up and try and mess it up in so many ways, and maybe we have. But that doesn't mean that it's a mundane thing and that we should think of it in that way. Rather, we should consider our great fortune that we have an opportunity to be associated with ISKCON. Now, Prabhupada was also concerned, as well as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, about how the succession would happen. What would happen with descendants in the future? And that's the subject of the verse today. Krishna's descendants and how they would act. Or in the purport, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Advaitas, their descendants. What would happen to them, and how would that affect the desire of the Lord? So that same issue was dealt with by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he broke with tradition in this way. How did he break with tradition, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, concerning the future of Gaudiya Math? How did he break with tradition? Who knows? No. Yes. Right, he wanted, traditionally, one passed the future to one's leading disciple, one disciple. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur broke with that tradition, and he wanted the devotees, his disciples, to work conjointly, and so therefore he wanted them to establish a governing body commission and work conjointly to spread the mission. And that's what they did initially. That's what they did initially, but then after less than 10 years, some division arose and they deviated from that structure. But Prabhupada had that in his mind. It was the desire of his Guru Maharaj. He didn't take it as a mundane thing. It was the desire of his Guru Maharaj. And so therefore, after establishing ISKCON, an association of devotees following after the desire of the previous acharyas, he also wanted a governing body commission to take the responsibility for moving forward. In the last days, Prabhupada was visited by one Mr. Bajaj. If you've been in India, you know Bajaj, at least fans, you know Bajaj fans. They have a fan, you know. So he was a wealthy industrialist. And he came to Prabhupada specifically, came all the way, I think he was from Mumbai. Giriraj Swami was saying he was from Mumbai. He came all the way to Vrindavan in the last days to see Srila Prabhupada, and he was very concerned. You must name someone. You must name someone so that your mission can continue. But Prabhupada was determined, no. He said, and I tried to look up different quotes in different ways. I think that there's a quote that I can say is relatively accurate. Prabhupada said that individually I don't have faith in you, but collectively I have a little faith. So he wanted a GBC, a collective group, not an individual to be named, to carry forward his mission in the future. And so the GBC is also not a mundane institution. The GBC gets a lot of criticism, but I can tell you the GBC is not a mundane institution. It's Prabhupada's desire, and we don't take Prabhupada's desire as being anything trivial or mundane. Again, there may be mistakes and we may not be doing it perfectly, but the idea that there is a GBC is what Prabhupada wanted and what we are working for. And it's not a mundane thing. So please don't take it in that way. We have an opportunity in this 50th anniversary year of ISKCON to actually get some peek into the fact that these are transcendental activities that we're engaged in, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and trying to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire that there be an international society where devotees work conjointly to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission all over the world, and that the GBC be the ultimate managing authority for that society, so that we don't break apart and lose the progress that we've made. These are, and there are a lot of quotes that can be given to support this whole thing, but maybe I'll just stop there, and if there's any questions or comments anyone has, we can talk about it for a few minutes. Yes.
You were mentioning in the report that Prabhupada's descendants, there's no real devotees, but I remember in I was living in India from like 89 to 95. So in 1995 at Juhu, Bombay, Prabhupada's youngest son, Vrindavan Chandra, came, and while he was discussing with some of the devotees, his two they told me, Nartaka, take his kids and show them around Hare Krishna land. So Hare Krishna land is pretty big. I mean, there's lots of different departments and things to show people. So we were for like a couple hours, and then we went to the, if you know, the residential buildings that used to be there and back. Most of them are down now. They've taken them down. And like when you see the picture of Prabhupada up on the roof, it's almost always that Juhu up on the BBT roof. And I live next door in the next building. So I took the kids up to that roof. And I have photos of it. There's the girl and the boy. The boy's younger. So they were, say, approximately, at that time, 18 and 16 or something like that. Maybe a little younger. So what happened was, then I was reading about, my memory is failing me, I don't know how many years later, but say this was 10 years ago, the girl got initiated and married a nice devotee and had a baby, and they were in, I think it was the Ganga near Mayapur, and she drowned, and it was in,
it was during
all the websites. And I'm not sure if the baby drowned also. But the girl drowned. And I felt so bad, you know, because she was a very sweet girl, very nice girl. And I have photos of the kids up there. So
Bhima Prabhu was also married to one of the members of Srila Prabhupada's family. And there is a lot of interaction between the family members and ISKCON. I don't know if you know, but the MVT Trust, Mayapur Vrindavan Trust, is essentially charged with the duty of looking after Prabhupada's family. And so they're given a flat in Calcutta where they live Vrindavan Chandra Day. The oldest one is Mathura Mohan. I've been searching for his name before. It's Mathura Mohan, the older one. Vrindavan Day is the younger one. And he was at this 50th anniversary celebration in Calcutta last year. He was with Prabhupada, actually, seeing him off coming to America. He was there and so on. Yeah, I've met him on a couple of occasions.
M.M. Day is and outside that door, it says M.M. Day. So I was a teenager, I used to knock the door. And a couple of times he opened the door, he said, just leave the check, goodbye.
I mean, we can see maybe even the devotees here, we're having some fond memories of Prabhupada's family. Imagine if, you know, we didn't have the sharp instruction and they could easily just take over the whole society based on the sentiment of being Prabhupada's family members. It's so strong. And therefore we find these histories that we're going to refer to. Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
Thank you. Just to mention, today is also Srivas Pandit, his appearance day, according to the calendar.
Okay.
So anyway, just remember this one Prabhupada's room conversation in Los Angeles. A few of his disciples there, of course. And somebody mentioned Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very powerful acharya. He could have finished Krishna consciousness around the world. And Prabhupada confirmed, yeah, he is a very powerful acharya, he will finish. But he left it to us to pay the credit. So similarly, Prabhupada, you know, being a great powerful acharya, he could have finished spreading Krishna consciousness more, you know, establishing more the way he wanted. He said, you take advantage, it's for your credit. Otherwise somebody else will do it. So you please do it. And then, you know, Prabhupada, the last days in Vrindavan, from the material vision, he told us, please work, cooperate together to maintain this institution, if you really love me. So, as you, GVC bodies, have a very great responsibility to maintain the entire society together and work together.
Yeah, 50 years done. Let's see what happens to get 51. Send us.
I'm going to bring up a little bit of a controversial point, but I just want you to comment on it. Recently, different devotees have come to me and brought to my attention that there are these very critical videos that are being shown on the internet of our leaders. And it just seems to me, you know, and then one devotee, you know, I was speaking to a couple of days ago, and I said, just don't go there. You know, because it's just going to weaken your faith and it's implicated in offense. And, you know, what I've seen, you know, I try to stay away from them, but sometimes I see them and they're oftentimes taken out of context and it makes the devotee look really bad. So I guess kind of what I'm thinking is it has a very kind of insidious impact, you know, in the minds of many devotees when they're exposed to this type of thing. And I realize it's beyond the GBC control, but it's something that seems to really hurt our rule. I'm talking about many in these positions.
Well, I think that the only remedy is that we educate ourselves. Your faith may be hurt if you're not educated. But at least if you educate yourself, then you have some ability to defend yourself. And just like you are making an effort to increase education here, various efforts around the world devotees are making to increase education. That, in my mind, is what will insulate you from something else. You can't stop what you don't control. But you can control yourself and your mind by educating yourself, and thus insulating yourself from all kinds of difficulties, just the ordinary onslaught of material nature. You can insulate yourself by knowledge and education. So that's your responsibility to do that. People will say whatever they say. The dogs bark, but the caravan will pass. I don't know.
Thank you very much for a very nice class. Sometimes we hear from devotees that, well, I have complete faith in Srila Prabhupada, I follow Srila Prabhupada, you know, 100%, but I'm not so sure about if I can trust an institution or an organization. And I think that you made a very, very strong point that the organization, institution is none different than Srila Prabhupada, and you shouldn't be taken that mundane way, and that's our faulty vision, that we make these distinctions, that we start seeing things that Prabhupada did as material. After all, Srila Prabhupada, on every single letterhead, building, every place he was addressed, was founder charter of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada and his identity with ISKCON was so strong, and those of us who were there at the time remember that it was like there was no difference. There was no real distinction, in fact, in Prabhupada's mind between his preaching of Krishna Consciousness and this International Society of Krishna Consciousness. I was just checking for a seminar I was doing, and in Srila Prabhupada's books, in his purports, he mentions ISKCON 400 or 500 times. Now, you would think he might in letters and conversations, but the purports, which are philosophical in nature, he still mentions the International Society of ISKCON over and over, stressing the importance of this association of devotees. And just, I guess, I wouldn't have brought it up, as Mr. Janmasu brought up that last point. I did have the opportunity to speak for about 3 hours to the producer of that video a couple of weeks ago. And I made some objections that much of it was exaggerated or outright fallacious, and he actually admitted it and said he didn't really care, it was for effect. That's one thing. a little loose with the integrity and truth, in my opinion. But on the other hand, after my initial being upset with the video and many of its aspersions against so many saintly personalities, I realized that it's probably Krishna's arrangement in some way also. And, you know, Krishna will use that to help us, particularly the topic was child protection, and somehow Krishna will use that for us to be able to increase our efforts. In fact, Chaitanya is the chairman of the GBC, is forming a committee of several of us are going to be directly working on addressing the issues that are raised, because there are some of the issues raised were legitimate. And we want to, and, you know, as I said, we're not perfect as GBCs, and sometimes we do need correction, and we need help and suggestions, and we need to recalibrate our own efforts and sometimes work better. And, you know, so this is an opportunity for us to also to respond in a positive way and improve.
Thank you.
I also feel that, you know, Prabhupada made it so clear that within ISKCON, that's the only way. You said living outside of ISKCON is like living in a hallucination. And there's so many instructions on how to live within that society. On the other hand, and I appreciate what you just said about, even though some of it might have been exaggerated or fallacious, that there were some real points in there that had to be addressed. Because if people feel that, you know, they can't say anything, they see something that's wrong, but they shouldn't say anything because it's offensive. We've kind of gone that route before, and it doesn't always really work that well. It's like people have to be able to, you know, maybe question or go, let's say, go to the right authorities with their issues. Maybe not put it online, but there has to be a system. You know, if there's things that are wrong, that people know how to fix it.
Well, I think we need an educated populace in ISKCON. We need an educated populace in ISKCON. Not that we try to protect people by censorship or other ways, or ways which ultimately won't be fruitful anyway, because there's no ways for people to give bad news than there are to protect them. But I think that if we educate people properly, then we have something to defend ourselves when we hear anything. That's one of the methods of devotional service. And initially, in devotional service, one's faith may be weak. And it's called komala shraddha. It's a weak. But how is it strengthened? How is faith strengthened? By study of the shastra. So if we educate ourselves, we understand Krishna consciousness, then we won't go away when we hear things which are exaggerated or have some truth or in them or whatever. We won't go away because we'll have strong faith. And so that is our own individual responsibilities. And we can't expect, there are societal things which are beneficial, but there's also individual responsibility. So we have that responsibility to become advanced devotees so that when we presented with any kind of argument, whether it be on issues within the society or philosophically, we won't go away. We'll have strong faith. And so that's our responsibility as part of the institution. It's 9:00. I think we should probably end there. Hare Krishna.